Welcome to the Advisor Advocates Podcast. My name is Garrett Lill. I'm a certified financial planner and former advisor. And I started Advisor Advocates in this podcast to share with other advisors some of the experience that I like to say I accidentally accumulated over the course of my 13-year career, especially around the areas of the industry involving transitions from one firm to the other, advisor recruiting, M&A deals, things of that nature. Interesting thing for advisors that I've experienced in my career is that advisors are often on an island. We don't really know what's out there. We don't know what's going on outside the walls of our firm and outside the confines of our own practices. Especially when I was working in the recruiting industry and talking with advisors, there were just so many advisors who didn't know what they didn't know. So the purpose of this podcast and Advisor Advocates is to help bridge that information gap, to help advisors understand a little bit more about what the landscape looks like out there, what options are available to you, and sort of share some of the insights that I've ran into and hopefully answer some of the most common questions that advisors have. So you think you want to start an RIA, and I do not mean for that title to seem sarcastic or facetious. I've actually done it not once, but twice technically, so I'm not judging. But on this show, we are going to dive into what it takes to start an RIA, what the process looks like. It is definitely a, let's call it a robust process, start to finish. So it's quite an undertaking, put it that way. And we're going to try to break this down in this episode to help you at least kind of lay out the step-by-step process and what you are going to need to do and some of the decisions you're going to need to make. So first of all, why do it? Why would you start an RIA versus tucking in with another independent firm or finding some other way to manage your brand? Or why would you leave an independent broker-dealer or an independent RIA to go start your own? And there are a few good reasons for this. I will say this first. In most cases, I would say it should not be the financials of the move. I'm not saying that it's going to be more expensive to run your own RIA than it is to tuck in with a larger firm. It's absolutely possible to run your own RIA for and end up netting a higher net income for yourself than you would from tucking into a larger firm. However, it is a lot easier to match the net income of what you would have from tucking in to a larger independent broker-dealer or an independent RIA than you might think. And I would encourage you, if you haven't already, to check out the video in the podcast that we did on that topic and kind of breaking down that landscape. Because if you are, especially a large practice, there's a very good chance that you might be able to end up within 2-3 percentage points or so of gross revenue, I suppose, before you get into your expenses, going with an independent that you can have your own brand and run through them. So 2-3 percentage points at the end of this episode, when you understand all the things that you're going to have to do, really is probably not going to be the reason that you make this decision. Although in some cases, it certainly might. There might be some situations where you might want to do that. There may be some situations where that may not be the case. But in most cases, I will say most firms that I talk to do not start their own RIAs just because they want to make more money than they would make with another independent firm. If you are in a wirehouse at the moment and you're considering making the jump all the way from W-2 employee to having your own RIA, that is something that a lot of firms do, and I can definitely understand if that's the decision that you're making at this point. However, if you haven't already, I would encourage you to at least do a thorough vetting process or go through a thorough vetting process of the independent firms that are out there. Being someone who came from the RIA world, it's incredible to me how cost-effectively you can run your business and how autonomously you can run your practice, just as if you are your own RIA. You just don't have to deal with the regulators if you are with some of these independent firms. So I encourage you to give those a glance if you're not familiar with them. However, sometimes the decision is going to be made that, yes, we need to have our own RIA. Some of those reasons may be that you want the investment freedom, or maybe you're considering starting your own fund. If you want to start your own mutual fund or your own hedge fund, or you want to have an SMA strategy that's available on many of the custodians' platforms, then yeah, you're most likely going to need to start your own RIA. There are some independent firms out there that you can plug into that do have that as a part of their offering as well, where they can help you get on their own SMA platform, which is on several custodians. I've even come across one firm in particular that has the capabilities of helping you launch your own fund while you're on their platform. So there are some options that are out there. However, most of the time, if you want to start your own mutual funds or you want to have your own, you know, documented performance track records of your own funds and your own strategies, that is one reason that a lot of firms do start their own RIAs. Another reason may be that you just have a unique business model, and I'm not going to try to dive into all of the different possibilities of this because this is almost by definition difficult to define. It's a unique business model. There could be a thousand different things there. But I'm someone who's done that. I had a business model that after I sold my firm and my sort of my first iteration of Advisor Advocates was a service that was doing lead gen for advisors. So with that, I needed to register, but there weren't a lot of independent firms out there who wanted to register someone with no assets under management and a business model that was unproven. So there are going to be some times that you want to undertake a business model that you do have to be registered, but you're going to find it hard to find an independent RIA who wants to oversee that because it's expensive for them to peel off two or three people from their compliance team to serve this one particular business that's not part of their core business model. So if you do have a unique business model, there's several others. That's just my example there. But if you are operating some way that's a little bit different than the typical models, you may need to go the route of starting your own firm. And finally, there may be a situation that you have an extraordinary outside business activity that may create a conflict with a lot of the larger firms. And this may sound a little bit shady, but honestly, there are so many ways that firms may not like your outside business activities, not because of anything that you're doing unethically, but it may create some type of a competition with them, or it could create some type of a situation where they're trying to find ways to get their paws in that cookie jar as well. So there are some situations out there, and again, a little bit too exhaustive of a possible list, I guess, to try to get into, but there are some situations. Hey, advisors are entrepreneurial by nature. We do have pretty creative minds when it comes to trying to find ways to make money. And sometimes the firms, you may be engaging in something that's profitable for you and may create a situation where there's a rub with a lot of the firms that are out there that you might be able to plug into. So there are some situations there that just for a lot of folks, you need to be totally on your own and start your own firm. And that kind of gets into, you know, one of the key benefits of having your own RIA is that you have total freedom of the business and total freedom of the outside business activities that you engage in. And when I was, you know, when I had my own RIA, I like to not brag, but when I would talk with clients, folks would come to me sometimes and say, can you do this? Can you do that? And the true answer was, if it's legal, I can do it. There is nothing inhibiting an RIA from engaging in any practice that they deem appropriate for their business. As long as it's legal in the eyes of the regulators, you're good. However, the cost of this freedom is that you have no insulation from the regulators. You are walking a tightrope with no safety net whatsoever. If you misstep, it's on you to be accountable to the regulators for your misstep. So it's a delicate dance that you're doing if you aren't familiar with the rules or you don't necessarily know where the lines are in the gray areas and whatnot. I didn't fully understand this when I started my own firm, and I wasn't doing anything unethical or anything that, you know, could get you in trouble, but I didn't know all of the rules in my state. I didn't know all of the rules that you had to follow. I was aware of the big ones, and I was aware not to break, you know, certain rules. I knew not to steal money from clients and do things. You know, I knew the big ones, but I didn't know every single T that had to be crossed and every single I that had to be dotted. And in my first state securities examination, when I explained, you know, they told me I was not compliant with in a certain area, I tried to justify that to the regulator. And at the end of the day, they don't care. You don't know what you don't know. But if you drift into that area unintentionally, you are ultimately the one who's accountable for that. Where while we may be annoyed by compliance when we have to report to our compliance supervisors, at the end of the day, those compliance supervisors with the bigger firms are there to insulate you from the regulators so that you don't accidentally drift. So there is freedom that comes in running your own firm. But if you do break accidentally or otherwise any of the rules, there's no one there to help you catch it. So just make sure you know what you're getting into with that. Registering as an RIA. The process of this is going to be registering with the state or the SEC, and that's pretty well understood. I'm not going to spend a whole lot of time on that. I think most advisors know less than 100 million in AUM, you're going to be registering directly with your state and in any states that you have clients. In most cases, you will be able to have up to 5 clients in each state without having to register. There are a couple of states I know for sure that if you have any clients, you have to register. Now, I'm not going to list those here because number one, I don't necessarily know for sure which ones they are. And number two, I'm not an attorney and I don't want to be accused of giving legal advice because I absolutely should not be doing that. But I do know that there are some states out there and you can look them up. Any states that you are doing business in, you should check with those states to see what their de minimis rules are to make sure that you know if you should be registering in that state or not. Now, there are some rules. Again, I'm not going to be listing them specifically, but just kind of guiding you in the direction of what to be looking up. There are some rules that sort of surround, are there other ways you can register with the SEC? Should you register with the SEC? Happy to have some of those conversations with you one-on-one. I'm not going to try to put that into the podcast because there are, again, mainly because I'm not an attorney. But if you're north of $100 million in AUM, that sort of kind of helps you understand where you're going to be going. And again, I think most advisors are familiar with those rules. Now, you may register yourself. I did that the second go around. The first go around, I did use a third party, and I won't talk about who they are just because it's not out of any bad blood or anything. But I just try to be careful not to make anybody mad or overly praise someone without their without their permission. But I did use a third party vendor to help me register my firm, and I used their compliance software and used their models and used them as my consultant for my RIA for about 5 or 6 years. And I will say in full disclosure, I ended up eliminating that service shortly before selling my firm because I had learned enough about it that I realized that all I was really paying them for was to tell me what to do. I was the one still going through the process of pushing those buttons and doing everything that needed to be done every year. I was really paying them a pretty large sum of money just to remind me what I needed to do. So I opted to save a little bit of money and cancel the service with them. But another really important lesson about this that, again, going back to my exam that I had with the State Securities Division a couple of years into my having my firm, I actually, I think I had like 13, little slap on the wrist that I didn't have to pay any fines or anything like that, but I got a corrections letter that said basically you need to fix these 13 areas of your business. And about 11 of them were things that the compliance firm had done incorrectly. So they had sent me the contract, sent me the agreements. I adopted them and used them, not realizing that they didn't check all the boxes that my state needed. And another interesting lesson about that is that in at least two or three of those cases, I can make an argument all day long that what I was doing was compliant and did follow the letter of the law in my state. And I even argued this because I tend to be a little bit of an argumentative person. And I did argue with the examiner that I wasn't in the wrong. And at the end of the day, not that this is what they said verbatim, but unless I wanted to hire a securities attorney and go prove that I was right in court, I was going to do what they said. So that's what I did. So again, that's where I go back to that. You don't have any insulation between you and the regulators in that regard. They're going to tell you how it needs to be, and you can like it or you can hire an attorney to fight it in court. And you're not going to want to do that. So at the end of the day, you're going to do what they tell you to do. So, using those third parties as effective as they can be at saving you time, you will want to go through a pretty thorough vetting process to make sure that whoever you're hiring for that role knows what they're doing. Because if they mess up, it's on you. Same thing if you're a large firm and you're hiring a chief compliance officer. If they mess up, you're the firm owner, it's on you. They are still signing, the compliance officer may be the one whose signature is on the form, and they would face repercussions as well if they made a mistake, but ultimately you're the firm owner. So you're the one who's going to be responsible for paying the fines and taking that accountability. So again, it just goes back to there's no insulation there, but the third-party consulting firms that do compliance are very effective and they're very helpful. Just remember that you are paying them to do a service for your firm. So if they mess up, that's on you. So when you start an RIA, you are literally building a brand new business from the ground up. And if you are already an independent firm, there's a very good chance that you may have already completed some of these steps when you started your own independent firm that maybe with an independent broker-dealer or an independent RIA. But if you are jumping all the way from a wirehouse to running your own RIA, there's going to be a lot of things that you are going to have to do as a part of that process that you may not have ever done before. And they're little tedious things too, right? Like designing business cards, starting a website, company letterhead, getting a fax number, office space. So, I mean, it's a very, very long list of things that you're going to need to sort of take inventory of that, again, you may not have done. deciding, do you want your email to be on Gmail or Microsoft Office and or Microsoft Outlook? And how do you set those up? And how do you get an email address that's at your company's domain versus at Gmail? Now, listen, these are not complicated things to do. It takes 5 minutes to do most of those steps. But in my case, I mean, some of those things took me 2 days to figure out how to do them. And then once I figured out how to do them, it was a 5 minute process. So that is one of the headaches that comes with starting your own firm, is that there are a lot of things out there that in and of themselves are not that complicated to do, but you're going to have to learn all that. And in a lot of cases, you're going to have to learn how to do that kind of quietly, because you don't want anyone else to necessarily know what you're doing in some situations. So that is one of the major challenges of going totally independent and having your own brand, is that while you are needing to go through the registration process, you're also trying to figure out how to do all these other things. And sometimes those things will butt heads with one another, because you're filling out your registration paperwork with the state, and it asks you for your company's website. And then you realize, oh, I don't have my company's website yet. So you end up having to go pause that process and go register a domain. You have to figure out how to register a domain. You do that, then you go back and you set it up. And then the regulator comes back to you and says, well, your domain doesn't have a website. Come back to us when you finish your website. So there can be a lot of things that you, there's a certain set of steps that have to be taken. And in some cases, if you don't do them in the correct order, it might end up taking you 2 years to do something that could have been done in 6 months. So there is, it's a process is the cliche to use there, but just bear in mind that some of these things will actually conflict with one another, and you will want to make sure you've got a game plan for how do we do these things. You're going to start with registering an LLC, and then from that, you're going to register the LLC as an RIA, and then as you're going through this process, you're going to be continuing to build out the rest of the firm with a very delicate choreography to it, to try to make sure that you get that dance completed as quickly and efficiently as possible. And while you are doing all these things, you're also going to be building out the infrastructure for your business. And by that, I'm specifics that we're going to get into here, choosing your custodian. That's the firm, if you're not familiar with the term, which you likely are, but that's who's holding the client assets. That's where you're placing trades. That's who's printing statements. It's a very critical piece of your business, because it's the one that's touching the client's money, which is going to be very important to them. You're also going to have to design your tech stack and build out your tech stack. Things like which financial planning software to use, which performance reporting and billing platform to use. Some of that's going to be integrated with the custodians that you select. And does this custodian have the technology integration capabilities that you need? You're also going to need to know what your investment strategy is going to be. Are you someone who's picking funds? Are you an ETF asset allocation strategy? Are you a stock picker? Are you going to be doing any options trading? Are you doing futures trading? Are you using any other exotic investments or alternative investments in the portfolios? Because again, your investment strategy may dictate to some extent which custodial partner is correct or which technology providers are the best fit for you. As we touched on just a few moments ago, in a pretty in-depth conversation already, you're going to need to address compliance. Are you going to hire someone to manage your compliance? Are you going to do it yourself? Are you going to use a third party? That's, again, a very key piece of your business model, because if you do not check the compliance box, then you will not have a company. So that's a key piece. Your marketing strategy, that's another part of it that you're going to want to spend some time really thinking about, because as a true independent, sky's the limit in terms of what you can do. But again, no one's there to catch your mistakes. So on your website or in your branding or in anything that you do, if you do drift into the dark side of the gray area, you're the one who's accountable to the regulators. So you're going to need to know what that strategy is going to be, make sure it's compliant. But then even simple things in your marketing, like a website. I know for a lot of advisors, that is, you could pop up a website in your sleep and that's great. When I set up my first firm, I didn't have a clue how to start a website. Thank goodness there was, I used what's now FMG Suites, which is a very simple turnkey way for me to get a site up and running pretty quickly. But that's an area that a lot of advisors just don't have a lot of experience in. I will say I have learned over time and somewhat by accident how to pop up websites pretty quickly. So I use Squarespace, and I would almost endorse them on this podcast. They're not paying me to do that. That's not a paid endorsement by any means, but they have a very user-friendly but technologically pretty savvy platform where they have a lot of features, and it's usually pretty simple to design your site pretty easily and pretty quickly. But you've still got to write the content, right? And know what you want to tell your clients, and then figure out how that presentation is going to look. And if you don't have a nice website and a, you know, a good presentation for clients, then this is a business where the image does matter, and that may scare off some of the clients that have been loyal to you. So there are all these things that may even seem cosmetic to some firms, but they are critical aspects of the business that you are now going to need to be able to handle from the ground up. And then you've also got to look at the cost of starting the firm. Now, I will say that this is the widest range that I could ever even imagine to give you. I mean, it could cost you $500,000 to start your RIA. It could cost you $5,000 to start your RIA. There are a lot of different components and variables that go into that equation, but some things that, you know, just to make sure we're checking them off and making sure that we are clear on what all they are. You're going to need your real estate. If you are, you know, furnishing your own office, it may be a permanent lease. You may look at something if you're a smaller or mid-sized firm just getting started. You may rent a temporary corporate office space at a, like Regis is a well-known national company, but there's a lot of those out there where you pay to have one office in a multi-office complex, and you just sort of, you know, pay as you go month to month. Those are really convenient for new firms, but if you're a large team with, you know, 25 advisors, you're going to need to search commercial real estate, sign a lease, negotiate, do all those types of things. You're going to have to look at your staff. You're going to have to look at your benefits. If you haven't had this before, you may be looking at setting up a 401k plan. You may be looking at, you know, setting up your own health insurance plan. Again, things that you may have helped your clients do already in the past, but now you're doing it for yourself on the other side of that. And that's just another thing you're going to have to remember to do. You're going to have financial planning and reporting software. This can be a really critical piece of that, because some of the reporting softwares are not cheap, and not all of them are necessarily a fixed fee, right? So a lot of your technology costs are going to be, you know, $5,000 to do this or $3,000 to do that. Some of your financial accounting or financial reporting and financial planning software is going to be per user, per client, or I'm not sure if there are any out there right now that are charging based on assets. I don't believe so. I think most of them are per account. But again, if you're a really large organization with a lot of different, you know, a lot of client accounts, those costs can start to really add up pretty quickly. So you're going to want to do a pretty thorough vetting of those in a lot of cases. And then also your website. Even though we touched on it before from the marketing aspect of it, from the cost standpoint, that can be a big variable as well. I can pop up a pretty solid looking website on Squarespace for about $50 a month without any, you know, design costs or anything like that. And I have also heard of firms spending $15,000, $20,000 on their website. So it's a really, really wide range there in terms of what types of functionality do you need, and how much are you willing to spend for those functionalities in your website. So a lot of these, you can see there why I say it can go from, you know, $5,000 to $500,000, depending on how, you know, in detail you want to get. Now, I do want to say here, and I'm not really big on being self-promotional, and I don't want this podcast to turn into an infomercial for advisor advocates, but I do want to highlight something here that is a key distinguishing piece of my business compared to some of the other M&A and search firms and recruiting firms that are out there for advisors. And that is that I have the experience from doing a lot of this myself a couple of times, that if you're in a position where you're thinking about starting your own RIA, I am able to offer a retained consultant service to you to help you go through that entire process along with you, help guide that decision-making process, help you go through the vetting process and make sure that you are, you know, kind of going back to where I said a few moments ago, doing things in the right sequence and trying to help you choreograph this entire move to help it be as smooth and efficient as possible. Because again, I've been through it a few times working together. It will be a smoother process for you than it would be undertaking it on your own in a lot of cases. So if you're interested in that type of service, we can chat one-on-one about the specifics of it. I don't want to turn this into a total commercial where that's all we talk about, but things like vetting your custodian, things like looking at your compliance and looking at the different vendors that are out there, helping you understand the technology packages that are out there and which ones may be the best fit for your practice based on your needs. If I don't know the answers and I won't know them all, I can sit in on the demo calls with you and kind of help you ask the right questions to get the answers that you're looking for to make sure that you're meeting your goals there. And there are some custodians out there who will pay me a referral fee if that's the decision you end up making. I'll be very transparent with you about that so you know who those are. But I bring that up to say I'm not going to double dip. If we agree on a retainer fee and then I end up being paid by the custodian that you ultimately end up selecting, then I'm going to reimburse your retainer and it will be as free for you as it would have been if we had gone to an independent or chosen that custodian from the start. But I don't want you to feel forced to use a particular custodian just because this custodian pays me and the one that you wanted wouldn't. So if you end up using selecting a custodian that is not willing to pay a third party a referral fee, and there are some of those out there that will not do it, then we do have the retainer option for you to pay me for that service. And it wouldn't be an all upfront proposition, and we'll kind of discuss in a call what the cost structure would look like. I will just in transparency, you know, kind of give you a spoiler alert, I guess, of it. I'm going to target around 5 basis points on the assets under management of your firm and your practice, but that's not all due up front. We would negotiate a portion of that to be paid at the beginning of the engagement, and then certain milestones throughout the first 6 to 12 months as you're getting the firm up and running, so that we're doing this in a smooth process for you, because I do understand that cash flow is king for your first year, and I want to be flexible with you on that. So I'd love to chat with you about that if you are interested in having a co-pilot to launch your firm. Would be very willing and able to help you get this off the ground, and would love to help if I can. If you have any questions at all about the process, I'm always here and love to help folks anywhere that I can. So feel free to give me a call. My number is in the description below, 919-561-2436. I always encourage at the end of the podcast to text me first if you're going to call, because I don't usually answer if I don't recognize the number. Also, feel free to email me at garrett@theadvisoradvocates.com. My calendar link is most likely in the description below, depending on which platform you're listening to this on and where you're viewing it. But if not, it's easy to get to it on the Advisor Advocates website. There are calendar links pretty much anywhere you see a Learn More button. It's very likely to be taking you to my calendar. So I'm easily accessible there if you want to schedule a Zoom call, or just submit a form message on the website. Let me know a little bit more about what you're looking to do. I'm very discreet, especially if you're in the wire channels and you're worried about that confidentiality. Trust me, I get it. Give me a personal email address and tell me how to contact you, and we'll arrange to have a conversation. And would love to help you if this is something that you are, if this is an avenue that you're exploring. And, you know, again, I really can't say enough. I guess I do understand it's a big decision. So I'm here to answer your questions. I'm not here to make them for you. I just want to make sure that I am available to help guide that process and help you figure out what decisions are best for you and your firm so that you can make the next step in your career a successful one.